This is a Pinball News production.
First of all, thanks for having me back to another Pinball Expo, and I want a big congratulations to Mike and Rob. I didn't go to all the expos, but I was at the original location for at least one expo. It was pretty good, and that's the only picture I could find of them on the internet. This talk, Rob asked, you know, can you give a talk? And last year has been a good learning experience as far as making
pinball and trying to make custom pinball. And custom pinball is much different than the pinball we used to make at Williams in the 90s. So I thought I would put together a nice presentation. We brought along some Zombie Adventureland cabinets. We're just finishing the prototypes. But these really show and reflect kind of the new methodology that I have to use now to make pinball for my customers and owners and, you know, the community. And a little bit of background. I started in Bally, or at Bally in the early 80s. It was a really good place to work. It was very family-oriented. We had a big, you know, giant pinball factory, and we were kind of king of the world at that time. So it was pretty pretty good. There's a sign that was out front. It was this giant sign, and it's missing, so we're trying to locate it. Somebody came and took all the signage down, and we found the Harlequin from the old Belmont building, but this sign was huge, like, you know, as big as this, you know, as wide as this room. So. We got to work with Nolan Bushnell, so he's a special guest at this year's Pinball Expo. We bought Sente, and it became Bally Midway Sente, and Nolan actually consulted with the pinball engineering team on making games, and in my case, he taught me a few things. Every game needs a champion, so somebody has to be the person to stand up for the game. Things that you wear on your sleeve, you know, you're going to get hurt, so you have to kind of let things out, let people comment, and really try and innovate. So interesting enough, even back then, those lessons we learned from this gentleman, founder of Atari, and a lot of other things, I still use today, and I try and teach to people that I work with who are younger that need to keep kind of motivated. I got to work at WMS Gaming in the 90s, so it's Mr. Sherd. And some of the games, in case you haven't, you don't know some of the body of my work, I haven't done a whole lot of games, so I've done a lot of game development, but not everything was produced. So I made a game called World Cup Soccer, which was a theme nobody wanted to do, because it's soccer. So soccer is really hard to do in pinball. But that turned out pretty good. Theater Magic, that's the spinning trunk, Houdini's trunk. Actually, it was modeled from one of Houdini's trunk that David Copperfield has. So that game did pretty good. Tales of the Arabian Nights. So at the time, this theme fit really well for pinball, and it was pretty cool. Star Wars Episode One, we got to do that for the movie, and the Pinball 2000 platform. Circus Voltaire, which originally started out as circus pirates. So we have a few sketches, and the idea was it was kind of like an island with shipwrecked pirates, and then there are these circus people that kind of come up, and they teach the pirates how to do circus tricks, and then it evolved into Circus Maximus, kind of like a Roman theme with lions and tigers and stuff, and then we changed it into Circus Voltaire for the European audience. And interesting enough, the game didn't earn very well, but people love it today, so we're not sure what happened, but we'd go on location, and there'd be like $60 in the coin box, where Theater Magic would have earned $450 a week in the coin box. And then Pinball 2000. So I started the Pinball 2000 project at Williams. Originally, it was the full back box was like the monitor, and it was kind of like a video game-type cabinet. So we worked on it this way for about 5 months, and then it changed to the version that we produced where the monitor was moved to reflect off the glass. And that's an early rendering. So this rendering's 15 years old. So we had this designed 15 years ago. But. And then when Pinball closed, we did different things. We went over to ICE. ICE is a company in Western New York. They make the bubble hockey game. And they wanted to make a pinball line because they make pool tables and all different games. But they didn't have pinball. So John Trudeau, Dr. Flash went over first, and then I went to help him. And we came really close to getting the pinball, you know, thing going, but there was just a lot of different issues and things we couldn't get done. But that was the logo. There's our ICE pinball logo. So. pretty cool. And then I went into the toy business. So I had a lot of experience. Of course, we did pinball in toys. And you may have seen some of these. We sold millions. And this was really good because I learned a lot about manufacturing and high volume tooling, quality control, all sorts of things we didn't have experience with at Williams as much. And being in toy business, if you do an injection mold apart, they're running just thousands, 30,000 a day of a part. So as a designer and engineer, you have to spend more time kind of on it. So it was a great experience. We got to do all different brands, Marvel and stuff like that. And then we obviously got into home pinball. The owners at the toy company, Zizzle, love pinball. So they hired me to design a 2/3 scale pinball machine for under $300. And we had, real flippers and coils and wood cabinet and steel legs. And our capacity, we had this gigantic pinball factory. We were doing 9,000 games a week in this pinball factory. And it was fascinating to go there and watch and just amazing. And the game did really well and for what it was. And it was meant for kids. And interesting, our number one customer besides kids were veterans who'd come back from Afghanistan or Iraq that were in a wheelchair. And they could put the game on their lap and move it around their apartment or their house. So we would help them with parts and things like that. So we were we were really amazed how well it did. Just to go back one, Mike. And then in 2005, these games had full LED lighting. So the game was all LED lit in 2005. I got to do some work at Apple. And this is how it segues into what I'm doing now. So we did some work for iTunes and some interactive interface design. And, of course, I merged it into an iOS app, Pinball Wizard. It was the first game that was a full screen kind of game. And it wasn't like the best pinball game, like the Zen games and that. But it was pretty cool. And we've had over 1 million downloads of it. And it was real interesting because this is not the pinball model. The pinball model is not kind of like this. And so I started thinking, how can I take this learning and bring it back into pinball? And of course, let's make it like a full-size game. So, could we take Pinball Wizard and make it a full-size game and go from there? And so I was kind of working on this, and then I started working on Magic Girl a little bit at home. And so I started to rethink everything. It's like, people love pinball, because people were playing this game all over the world, all different countries, and how can we, make some new pinball games? But at the time, pinball was just about gone. Stern was just kind of hanging on. Nobody else was doing anything. And I had, a friend of mine come over, and he's like, you should take your Magic Girl game and tell people, what you're going to build and, kind of go from there. And kind of off we went. So we created a company called Zidware, and we had everything in kind of in my basement studio. And we found some space to move into and kind of set it up. And now it's a really fine-tuned kind of place to work. And this is just one shot of one of the sides. So we do everything on the Mac. And we have, engineering area and kind of a build area and electronics and things like that. And it's just dedicated to pinball design and development. So it's just pinball. Just pinball thinking, pinball work. And again, the idea is to, how can we take all the great ideas we had before and then bring them forward into the new pinball, atmosphere today that we're experiencing? Because pinball's kind of back. It's a real kind of a retro thing, so it's cool. I still design the same way. So people that come and visit, I do everything by hand sketching. So I sketch everything by hand. The computer is a tool. You can't design a good pinball game in the computer. You can maybe model parts up, but I learned old school pencil on Mylar, so I still draw that way. I use the yardstick, and then kind of go from there. So when Ben was over and we were working on Zombie Adventureland, we had this stuff set up and we're just drawing out ramps and that. And he was amazed because he had never seen anyone do it that way. But that's how you get really beautiful kind of form and really nice shots. Is you have to sketch it all by hand at full scale, at full size. And then, here's me making a change. I don't like that, make that change. And I change a lot. I do a lot of iterations. And I think that's how you get really great you get to the zen of pinball. And this will sound kind of strange, but the games will kind of, they'll speak to you what you need to change. So if it's a piece of artwork, if it's a color, if it's the size of a, you know, of a character on a on the cabinet, whatever it might be, the game will kind of let you know what you need to do. And so for whatever reason, I kind of have that insight or that intuition, and it comes through time and it comes through iterations. So we'll draw something, and if it's not quite right, you know, we'll redraw it again, and you know, and that's the way that's the way it was at Williams in the 90s. You know, if you had a weekend, if you had an extra day, and you could make your game better, we were, you know, we were told by management, well, stay late, you know, redraw that drawing, do what you need to do. And I think that's part of the reason why the games are so successful and did really well, is just a lot of extra time was put in the fine-tuning stage at the end, which is important. But eventually I hit the wall, because I'm kind of designing, you know, the old way, and then we have this idea of customization. And we have kind of a design-centric philosophy where, you know, the designer's kind of the master. This is what I'm making. You're going to like it. You know, I'm going to put you under spell. You're going to like it. You're going to like it. But today we have a people-centric kind of community. We have owners. We have collectors. We have new pinball people that they say, you know, I don't like that material, or I would like a bigger thing on my game, or I want some more LEDs over there, or I want something customized. I want something built for me. And we never designed that way before. We designed for the coin box. You know, make production and make sure the game earns. So it's like, well, what does this mean, customization? So, you know, obviously it's an adjective, and it's real specific, you know, made to fit the needs of a particular person. So the games that we make at our company, you know, we only make a small amount of games, but the games are slated for a particular person, and every person's a little different. So it's I have to change kind of how I think about this, and there's kind of a real power kind of in that, and it can be good and bad. And obviously, as a designer, you know, I can kind of change the landscape. I can kind of change the roadmap of where I'm going. I can look at, you know, new ideas, methods, material, you know, typical industrial design processes or methods. We have to find simple ways to do very creative things, because just throwing money at an engineering problem or trying to make a game interesting is not always the best way. And the rollover button's a great example. So in World Cup, you know, we did a new rollover button tool. And that same tool is used on Wizard of Oz today, but that's a real simple device, but it's really cool. And, you know, it hadn't been seen in a while. Come up with really great examples, or, you know, I say amazing or stunning examples of technology. You know, what can we use? So in our case, like on our custom games, we don't have them mounted here, but the LCD display goes back here. And we haven't shown the interface yet, the way that it looks. Some people have seen it, they've come in, but it's stunning. It's perfect. And you know, we'll show it soon, but that's a great example of just using a graphic and a display to do something really amazing that hasn't been done. Just go back. But the problem is, you know, we're designing within a paradigm. So pinball is very iconic, and as designers, we have to worry about that. And if we change too much, you know, the pinball game will shift over to kind of goofy or weird or different and unlikable. And what I found with my customers, that everybody has a mind's eye of what pinball is or what pinball should be. So we've had to really take hold of that and make sure what we're designing, whether it's on the play field, the cabinet, the back glass, really exhibits that as well. And also, you know, in many regards, I'm designing for one person. So I'm designing not a game for 1,000 people. It's like designing 1,000 games for 1,000 people. Because customers will say, well, can you draw my dog and put him on the game? Or can you laser cut, you know, my initials? Or can you draw another character on the back glass? Or whatever it might be. And the old days, we never had people calls about anything. Only that, well, how do I make the game earn more? Or this part breaks. You know, can you send me kind of a bunch of them. So it's, you know, it's new, and it's like, well, how do you do this now? I have all these other issues I have to worry about, and I'm just trying to make a pinball game. So it gets very complicated. But if we go back, the idea of customization is not new. So, for example, in the Beam Light was the first game that had colored light bulbs that lit up the playfield, and everybody was making mod kits or retrofit kits at the time in the 30s to do that. And then we can go to the next one, which is the bumper. So when the bumper came, we had spring bumpers, and then we had bumpers that had a mechanical action that also appeared in the, you know, the later 30s. Same thing, people were modding their games, customizing their games back then with bumper kits, adding action where there wasn't any action. So it's like taking an Arabian Nights and changing a post and then putting a pop bumper in, you know, putting a retrofit, kind of like that. So this has been going on a long time, this idea of customization. And then obviously, you know, the big one, the flipper. So this is a Ballyhoo. So this is one of the last Bally games that didn't have a flipper, and Bally kind of got out of pinball. But as an example, there were companies like the Block Manufacturing Company in Chicago and others that made flipper retrofit kits. So you could take an old game, put flippers on it, mod your game, you're customizing your game the way you want. In this case, they're trying to get earnings, kind of earnings going. But pretty well, from 97 to 2011, nothing really happened in pinball. The paradigm didn't change. Still DMD, two ramps, kind of the same. And we needed something to do it, and we call that a game changer. Something to come in, and it's a longer discussion. But was this the flipper that came in 2012 or 2011 when it started with The Wizard of Oz? And we have to look at the game as limited edition. You know, it had LCD, which was new, RGB lighting, perceived higher quality toys. It had an X factor, some cool thing that people liked, new ideas, more value. And the price went up. But what this game did is it appealed to what people wanted at that time. You know, they gave you exactly what they wanted at that time. And the customer is demanding more attention. Pay attention to me. I'm giving you my money for this game. Well, I want, a ramp that is molded and it glitters, when it lights up. Or I want, three spinners on the game, not one. Or I want extra decals I can put down. In that case, Wizard of Oz did that. It kind of crossed the line over from being a mass game to very much a custom game. And obviously, something original. Show us a lot of things that are new. And those are the three things I get from everyone I talk to. Show us something that's never been done in pinball, have really nice ramps and lots of magnets. And then all the other stuff, art within that. But that's what people say. They'll call me and do that. And the operator's kind of gone. So again, the old days we designed for coins. Well, for the most part, unless you make, $29.95 pinball that earns $300 a week, operators, they're just not going to buy as many $8,000 games to put on location that make $150 a week. They're going to buy a driving game or something else. So to do this custom stuff, we have to build a new team. We have to put a new team together, which is what I had to do, and come up with kind of a new formula. And what we came up with was, a complex design that's new, very detailed artwork, great themes, new talent, get young people involved, ramps and magnets and never-before-seen things. So even if it's the simplest thing, say a stand-up target that, pops up and down or something, it's like people are like, wow, I love that. And it's the simplest thing in the whole world. But that's what people are demanding from me to do, doing custom game. So we came up with these rules. And obviously teamwork begins with your colleagues. So people you work with, whether it's an artist or customers. People come to the shop and visit. And, I'll let them just talk, and give me their observations. Vendors, whether it's using new methods, laser, new technologies, new materials. Your vendors are your best resources doing custom. And a lot of times they have methods and machines that you don't know about that can do really cool things for what you want to do in custom. So we're always looking at, we're always looking at things like that to go and put in the games. And new friends. So here's my new friend Ben Heck, or relatively new friend. This was a great quote. Exceedingly eccentric, modern, extraordinaire. And what Ben did, it's not to kiss his butt or anything, but he basically helped me to update my toolkit, what I used as a pinball designer from the 90s, with a whole bunch of new stuff. So 3D printer and being more social. You know, the old days we were locked in our rooms. We only talked to the patent attorney or went out for lunch. And in today's world, it's completely the opposite. You know, when Ben comes to my shop, he'll photograph stuff and put it out on Twitter immediately. And I'm like, whoa, stop. You know, what did you just do? And so it's very different than how we grew up. And basically to try and share more. So I'm, you know, and for me it's hard, but I'm doing a better job talking to people, trying to get things out, trying to show what we're doing, and kind of go from there. But in Ben's world, it's easy. I mean, that's the way they grew up. In my world, we're a little more closeted, being pinball designers. That's the way we were trained, and that's the way it's traditionally been since the 1930s. And obviously, original ideas. So that's a sign we have up in the shop. So everything we do, we try and do original, and go from there. And I'll explain a bit on the cabinets that we brought once we go a little farther down the presentation. I came up with some rules. Some of these were hard lessons to learn. Don't show anything if it's not protected. So, if you tell people secret stuff, they'll tell other people secret stuff because it's exciting and it's news and it's kind of the way we are today. So anything that you want hidden, make sure that you kind of, just keep it to yourself until you're ready to show it or give it out for someone else to use. Don't badmouth colleagues. It'll come back. It'd be helpful. It's hard to keep teammates and vendors and other developers motivated. So I work 7 days a week. I get up very early in the morning and I work till my eyes are red. And I don't neglect my family, so that's not an issue. But it takes that many hours to make pinball. It's really a long kind of a thing. And a lot of people you work with kind of just stop. You know, they burn out. They're like, you know, man, you're crazy. I can't do this. But again, what I learned in the 90s working at WMS was you had to put in that time to make really great games. It's just there's no other way to do it. And it's just the only way. Keep focused on the pin game. So you'll notice that, you know, I have, you know, Martin calls me all the time, can you do a pinball news article, photographs? And I say, you know, Martin, it's not time yet. And we have to keep focused on the pin game. So I've been lucky. I've made 3 or 4 games or 5 games have done really well. People have them now. They pay a lot of money for them. I don't have to do anymore. I can just, you know, pull up a Theater Magic and sit over here and sign autographs, and that's fine. But I'm not done designing. But it's not about me. It's about trying to make new pinball, trying to make exciting pinball, trying to invigorate the community for all the new people that are coming in, and then for people that are, you know, kind of diehard pinball collectors. So we always try and focus on the game. Don't lie to your customers. Tell them the truth, even if it's not the best news. It's better just to be honest. Definitely have respect for pinball. A lot of people will try and beat you down. I stay off pinside. I get flamed all the time. People would never say it to your face, but they'll say it on pinside. And that's okay. It's really a compliment. You know, they're complimenting me. And I know I'm focused and working hard, so it doesn't bother me at all. And teach the younglings. So, you know, I'm a Star Wars fan. And so whatever I can impart to other people, it's important. We were talking about it earlier. Steve Ritchie helped me a lot when I was at WMS, thinking about shots, how to lay stuff out. You know, you shoot the ball up. Well, where does it go when it comes down? You know, and he would close the door, and he would go over my games and help. And, you know, and that's him teaching the youngling just how to be a better designer. And, you know, what I was taught, you know, it's forever, and it's made my games better. And it's because a much better designer than myself at least was able to pass that along, and that, you know, that's great. So I try and do the same as much as I can, or if people are interested to do that. And then new rules. So whatever we do, we try and make original. We rethink a lot of stuff. Doesn't mean we redo it, but we just like, well, is that the best way to do it? And a lot of times it is. You know, pop bumper is a pop bumper. It just works a certain way. Obviously, the paradigm shift. How much do you change where it's goofy? And you have to be careful. What to design, the theme. Theme is hard. So if you're a boutique manufacturer, well, what theme do you pick? It's kind of hard to do. Reinventing old technology. I call them iconic pinballisms. Do you change them? So I'm a big back box guy. I like full artwork. So I would not design a pinball game without a back box, personally. I think that's part of pinball. In this case, our new cabinet, you know, we've brought back the neck or the pedestal that was in the 70s. It's very iconic. Here we've kind of upgraded it. And the certain shape of the pinball, the width and the length, you know, certain things you just don't change. And people know when you do change. They're kind of like, I don't like that. And they don't know why, but their image in their mind's eye, something has shifted from what they know pinball to be to what you've now redesigned it to be. And they'll say, well, I don't like it, but, you know, you don't really know why, but you've done something. So there's certain things you have to adhere to. And obviously look at future trends. And Nate from Coast to Coast, he reminded me or informed me that we have a OCD player, just a new type of a player that requires a lot of feedback. You hit a target, flashes, things do. And I hadn't really thought of that. And I was like, you know, wow. So now, you know, I'm kind of thinking about it, which is kind of great. So these are kind of rules. So everything I do, this list is kind of going. And we get back to custom. So what can we change? You know, we can change the theme, cabinet, playfield, toys, you know, on and on. It can kind of go on forever. So what do I mean by all of this? Well, everything can be touched or is touched when you're doing custom games. So that can be very good, and it can be very complex and become a you know, kind of a big problem at the same time. But we can look at some ideas and things that we're doing. And for the most part, each of the new games, like Magic Girl and Zombie Adventureland, you know, the feature list of new items is at least 50 features on the game. It's probably more, but it's a lot of small things that have been upgraded, changed, moved, added. As part of this philosophy of, you know, what is a custom game? How can we do that? How can it be made in a reasonable kind of framework or budget? And it really adds up to a lot of things. And we can have a look at them here quickly. Obviously, new toys. So don't go to the Walmart and buy an action figure and stick it on the game. Sculpt something new. We have lighting now. We can change the color of lighting. We can have a low current, cool lighting. We can have really brilliant kind of spacey type lighting. We can change the color of the playfield in all different areas. We couldn't do that before. We just had an incandescent bulb and that was it. But now we can do a lot more. Real art. And what I mean by real art is art that you've hand-drawn, hand-sketched, you've hand-painted, you move it through, and it's designed for the pinball machine. So it's not from a clip art, or it's not a logo. It's something that's actually started and been designed only for the pinball game itself. More detail. So this is an outlane from Magic Girl, and we have a thing called the Jinsei. And there's two gins on each side. But that's the outline. So that's behind the flipper return guide. And there's just a ton of art, a ton of detail in that small area. And the interesting thing is when people visit, they notice that. So they'll go up to the game, and we'll be building something or testing. And people will be like looking over at the playfield. I know Uncle Mike did it one time, and there's all sorts of hidden stuff in it. And we're just watching, and the customer, the owner, understands, recognizes, and appreciates more detail. So we're not saying like, oh, look at all the drawing we did here. You know, nothing. We don't say anything. We just sit back and listen to people, and you know, people respond to it. Even the little stars. You can see the stars there. So we go back to Dave Christensen's work from the 70s, and we draw the stars, and we try and bring forward some of those traditions and pinball graphics. They're really great. But the community, all of us, appreciate it and kind of look for it intuitively, which is fascinating, you know, to me. So so more detail, brand detail. So even on brackets, you know, we have a lightning bolt logo. We have it on the hinges. So everything we do has this logo. So we're adding a little detail to define our brand from other pinball makers, because there's more than one today. But again, that little attention to detail that people need, rethinking. So we're working on, Chris from Cointaker designed a new pop bumper, kind of a LED board, a triple thing. It's beautiful. It makes this beautiful glow. And we've been working on it for a while. And we didn't have to do that. We put the bulb in. But it's like, you know, can we do something else? We just, you know, pop bumpers are really cool. And we, you know, just do something. And he's going to have a display. And, you know, we're going to wire it up at the shop probably tomorrow or Saturday. And It's exciting. You know, it's a little more money. You know, it's not like it's $50 per pump bumper. It's a couple of dollars more per location, but it's just beautiful. It's a beautiful custom upgrade for pinball machines. It's
very doable.
And even more. So this is, again, an outline from Zombie Adventureland. But, again, we go in and draw and add details. And in this case, you know, we have to draw characters because we don't have... with the LCD, you have a problem. So you can have graphics, but we have to have backgrounds, we have to have characters, we have to have a story, and we have to draw, we have to create all of that. We can't buy. So this is our Nordmanite. I was telling Dennis earlier, we use Nordmanite all the time, and there's an example, I'm not lying. And we build the full game in foam, and we build all the ramps and whatever we need to, and then we work on that. Because it's easier to cut and paste in foam, and paper and foam for, than it is to do wood and steel. You know, building cabinets like these prototype cabinets, it's a lot of work, and it has to be exact because you can just drill one hole in the wrong area, and all of a sudden you have a problem. What do we cover it up? Do we fill it? So in this case, we have a Zombie Adventureland. We're doing something called a cabinet mod. So we're modding the inside of the cabinet, and in this case, we have a portal, but we didn't cut the hole yet because we have to set it up at the studio, and we didn't have time before Expo, but you know, we bolted in the windows, and we're going to kind of go from there. But ideas like this come off of our foam models, and you can see it on the foam model on the bottom left. And inside there's neon; it's like an atomic reactor. And not everybody liked it. My wife saw it one day, and she goes, "I really like that." And we're like, "Okay, well, why do you like it?" And you know, and it stayed in the game. So her first sense was, "That's really cool. Nobody's done that before." And this modding is always like a copper shooter knob or something like that. Well, why can't you mod the inside of the cabinet? There's no reason why you can't. Oh, and patents. So our new cabinet is patented. One cabinet patented, two LCD patents, interactive LCD patents that we've been working on. And people go, well, why are you working on that? Well, we spent a long time designing and developing this, and, you know, we need some protection, and this is our brand. This is what we're building. So we spend a bit of time on that. And passion. So there's a picture of Dale. Dale's our head engineering tech, and Dale's just a great guy. And you know, he works with me, and I'm a little bit of an issue with my red hair. But you know, everything we do, we just kind of work it out. And again, it's about the game. It's not about us. We have a lot of fun, but. You know, we try and do, you know, real high quality, good detail, very creative. And, you know, I wouldn't say too serious, but serious enough to kind of get the job done. And new cohorts. That's a good picture of Philippe. He's a photographer in New York. I met through him and Chris Medina. And Philippe's been in taking photographs. And it's just great because these people travel around the world. They have a whole different idea of pinball. And they have a whole different talent. And it's a great mix. So, you know, in my case, I have to get out of the office and open the door and meet new people and do new things. And it's kind of great. And I call this one Final Task, but it's more about details and final kind of little things doing custom pinball. So, in the case of this is a corner shot of from Magic Girl. So we have a on the theater magic, we had a thing called a tiger cell. And we found some documents, some old Da Vinci documents, that he had made a machine called the lion saw. It was a war machine. He designed a war machine. And we found some drawings of the lion saw. And it basically were these wooden, like, contraptions with the lions chained to them with saw blades that they would push into war. So we redrew it, re-illustrated it, and we have it in the game, and we have it kind of on the cabinet. But the idea in this case is that all the details, all the areas of the pinball game have been thought about. So the type of bolt we use, the washer, the hinge, how the artwork is laid out, the idea that the artwork is hand-drawn, kind of on and on and on. All these little final tasks or final items to button up, the customers notice, the owners notice. People buying custom pinball notice and they want. And it's amazed that people, and I have a customer, Kent, that he comes all the time and he'll knock on the door. And the last time he came, we were just finishing these, and he goes, I love this. He's going like this. And this is a grown man with kids. He has a this. And he's,
he's going, I love this. And he goes, you know, it's kind of like 3D, and it's kind of cool, and it's like, we're like, you know, he's just like a 10-year-old. But he got what we made. You know, the passion and the final details, that final something, we put into it from our end. And then, you know, right away he goes, you know, I love that. And it's like, you know, so I you know, I can't explain it, but he, in that case, he's getting kind of where, you know, where we're trying to go. So, and it's good. So it makes you feel good. And, you know, also takes a lot of time. But you know, people that, you know me, I'm very detail-oriented. And I go over everything. It has to be just so, or we change it, upgrade it, or, you know, take it out of the game. Obviously, novelty. So this is a device from Magic Girl, a new magnetic type of device. And we'll build these test kind of little fixtures to test them before we put them on the game or put them on the play shield. And so a sense of novelty, you know, lots of novelty. Risky ideas. So this is kind of a sketch of zombie, and we're kind of working on an underground kind of a level with something new down there that we're working on. So we'll try it and see how it is and kind of get it out. And then the X Factor. So we had the Coin Taker people were over this week visiting, and he's going, I like that. And he doesn't know what it does yet. And that's the X Factor. That's what I learned in the toy business, is that something that you can't really name that people kind of respond to. It's pretty cool. But now we're kind of crossing a little bit over into mass customization. So we're taking the custom idea and moving it mass, not mass across people, but mass across the game. So how can we customize, change, make a little better, make different, make new, make special, a little more detail, just kind of not off the shelf like pinball, across the game, not, you know, across people, and apply to all aspects of the design. So whether it's cabling or wiring or back box or what, you know, whatever it might be, and create this kind of new design language or new brand or new, it's almost like a philosophy. And then here we can look at some ideas with our pinball cabinet. So in this case, you know, our LCD sits at the back. I've shown a few videos of it, but we had to rake, so this angle has changed in the front. And you'll notice, you know, the cabinet is this, who's been this one around too there? It's this big, giant kind of, you know, trapezoid type shape. And what it allows us, two things. One, it allows me functionally to put my display in, but it gives me more art space. And people will come in and they'll go like, I love that I have more room for art. People, you know, a customer owner will come in and they notice it. They notice that something is different on the game. And in this case, we have the kind of the zombie pinup girl. And, you know, she fits perfect. And again, we'll think about it. How are we going to illustrate it? How's it going to fit in? Where's the logo going to go? And we have some decals. We're thinking of perhaps adding decal sets to the game. And we did this on World Cup. We made decals. But this extra space, the back box is about an inch higher, and it allows us to do more artwork, be more dramatic, you know, more beautiful. And it's really neat. And in this case, obviously, with the back box, we've added, you know, obviously, stainless steel up here in the lock trim, stainless steel in the bottom back glass trim, full-size back glass. As I mentioned, we added the pedestal, so we can do ground effects lighting if we want. Coming underneath, we could put the on-off switch here if we wanted. But we added illuminated Z, the Zidware logo. And again, for me, this is very iconic pinball from the 70s. Kind of the back glass, you know, the pedestal, the neck, and, you know, the cabinet. You keep going. But that type of philosophy and take it all around. And obviously for our new design, you know, we do everything in 3D CAD. So everything's done virtually once we have our design. And we kind of go from there. Illuminated flipper button. You know, illuminated shooter, all standard items. So you don't have to buy like an upgraded version. You get as, you know, we put as much into the game as, you know, will look good. And so it's good for me because then I don't feel guilty about like cheating someone. Well, you got to pay, you know, $1,000 more to get the extra ramp. It's like, well, if it works in the game, you know, we'll put it in the game. And some of these features work, you know, really well. Flipper button. The games have a five-speaker sound system. So we have two speakers under the front here, 10-inch woofer, and then the back glass has two. You can see the cutouts here where the magnet is built. And Michael Pupo from Flipper Fidelity designed it for us. And we came over working on it, and he's like, oh, you know, I don't know. And we're just like, you know, let's just wire it up. And when you play, you know, the sound comes around your feet. So it kind of works the way we thought it would work. You know, something new doesn't really cost much more, but that's, you know, kind of a defining element as a standard kind of a feature. And this you can't see too much, but it's just basically quality. And we'll move these out after the seminar outside. You can have a look. That everything has to just be screwed in correctly, be straight. The cabling is nice. Everything is nice. And you'll notice on in this case, you know, we chose not to spray paint the insides of the cabinets. They're laminated. It's a real tough kind of a laminate. So the games are real clean inside. There's no overspray. And then we can put, you know, decals or other kind of items on the sides later on. And it's just a cleaner, it's just a nicer look. And actually, for us, it's easier to make the cabinet this way than to have the spray line, you know, to kind of spray it out. And obviously, artwork. So all the artwork starts hand-drawn. And sketch, and kind of off we go. So it's very much like a small movie production. And actually, the Pinball 2000 work that we did with Star Wars and with the Revenge from Mars guys, it really helped us because, you know, George and I, we had to storyboard this stuff. We had to figure out what the scenes are, what the characters are, what the sounds are, and what the interface is going to look like, and, you know, on and on and on. And so actually, all that learning that we did back then has really helped here to kind of get it all sorted out. But in our case, the biggest problem is we have, you know, with the LCD screen, we need assets. We need something to put up there. So we need backgrounds, we need characters, we need fonts, we need logos, we need artifacts, weapons, what, you know, whatever it might be. And then the interface itself, how is everything laid out, that whole interface design. So, so we had to think about this early on and kind of continue. And the cabinets we brought here, these ones have four different sides. But you can see some of the backgrounds and then some of the characters. And so you get a little deeper rule set, and you have just a lot more to work with and a lot of kind of great art. So it's just not like a logo stuck on a game. It's actually well thought out. And then what we found with the play field and the LCD and the back glass, we have to share a similar palette, a similar color range. And for those work together, because those are the three panels that you're working at, and they're all kind of illuminated differently. You know, this is backlit, and this is kind of frontlit. The pinball customer may not like what you finally end up with. So being a small builder, because my customer is one phone call away or one email away, they're either going to love it or it sucks. And, so if we, you know, look back at all, everything else that I talked about and all the areas of customization, everything we can do, and it sounds all great. Oh, yes, John, give me everything customizable and make it light up and make it move and blah, blah, blah. You can get to the end product and your customer doesn't like it. And now you have a problem because you've spent a year more. And I work very slow and told. With my thread here. But I know when it gets to the end that it has to be amazing. And it's a real caveat to do and to be careful. So and that's part of the reason we brought the cabinet. We left the play fields out on purpose. I'll put the back glass in for a few seconds and then I'll pull it out. But We brought it on purpose, partly just to show just some creative ideas, what we're thinking, to show color-wise how things look and kind of our cabinet style. But we've had them out on this. No, this is a really great kind of a painting. But we had them out in the hallway, and we were sitting in the corner, and everybody was going by, kind of like. Because under the wrap, they didn't recognize the colors of the artwork. It was new.
I think these look wonderful, and I think they obviously it's taken a lot of time to do, and it was a real kind of an interesting kind of way to get people to come over and talk about the games, talk about the story with the game, and we were showing them that even on the front, you know, in all my games, we put in King Arthur, and you know he's here down on the front of the cabinet. He's a zombie cat, but he really is dead. You know, he's dead now, but we drew him kind of a zombie with his ribs hanging out, and it's kind of awful, but people noticed that. They're kind of like, where's your cat, right? Where's the cat? And we kind of showed him. And off we went. But apart from this, and these kind of points, these philosophies are in these cabinets that we've built, and will be, you know, obviously in the play fields and in the artwork is, and this is, you know, not the greatest picture, but neatness. You know, people like things neat and orderly. So if you're going to build a pinball playfield, you know, the brackets have to be, you know, correctly made. They have to be put in neatly. You can't have extra holes. The right washer has to be there. The right spacer has to be there. The flippers have to be at the right angle. You know, you don't mess with the flipper angle, certain distance. So all my games have a certain kind of a bottom layout. And you kind of stay with it, neatness. Beauty. Games have to be beautiful. You know, I think this is beautiful. We have a series of different kind of zombie, we call them zombie pinups. Some people have asked not to have any zombies on their game. They just want all pinups. Which is, you know, an interesting comment. So they'll say, we'll pay extra, you know, if you just put, you know, zombie pinups for whatever reason, you know. And it's not, and the idea is that it's not like an X-rated game. It's not erotic. It's just kind of beautiful retro art. You know, back in the 60s, and 70s, all the women had big, beautiful hair. They spent time on their hair. You know, my mom, the big hair and kind of all of that. So, but ultimately, the whole game has to be beautiful. In a pinball world, it has to be, you know, kind of beautiful. And that's important that people pick it up. A ramp. So whatever you do ramp-wise, this is the Jetstar ramp from Zombie Venture in cardboard. Not Nordmanite. Just cardboard. You know, you got to have really cool ramps. You know, kind of in your list of things that people notice and things that people want. Shiny. So, and we call it the shiny new thing, something new. In the case of our playfields, and I talked about this before, you'll notice on the side here, you know, we didn't use wood, you know, like poplar spray-painted or vinyl-covered wood. We have stainless steel C-channel, stainless steel bottom arch with silk screen, and then, you know, stainless steel shooter gauge cover. A couple of reasons. One, it makes the play field stronger. It's only a little more money. It's not much more money. You get good quality control, but it's shiny. You know, it reflects the LED lighting. It's very beautiful. It's really, you know, it's just really interesting, especially when the game is turned off. And people notice it. They notice that it's just a little better than maybe what they've seen before. But in my case, it helps me building because, if I put down a rail, I don't have to worry about alignment or anything. And we don't screw to the top of the rail. We screw inside the rail like they used to do in the 70s. So we don't have to worry about brackets moving, scraping all the inside of your cabinet, all that stuff. You know, we eliminated all of that. But people like shiny, you know, shiny new things. Innovation. So we're gonna have toppers. But we're going to have the topper do like one thing in the game. So if it's double scoring or whatever it might be, the topper will do something a little different. So instead of just lighting up, the topper will kind of reflect state of play, you know, state of gameplay. So again, it's still a topper, but it'll be just a little different, a little new, a little bit of X factor, something innovative, which is what people ask for. Give us something new. And we talked about detail before. I call it massive detail. So I wouldn't call it overdrawing or over detail, but just give us more detail. And we spend a lot of time drawing art, doing comps and things like that. And again, you know, last Pinball Expo, one of my customers, Joe, he couldn't come to this expo. He was on the floor. He had a black line, a magic girl. He's just laying there. He laid there for about an hour. He was a big man. He's just looking at all the lines and he said, I haven't seen art like this in a long time.
And so he appreciated and what we're doing, and that's kind of the whole idea. That's why we spend extra time, so people will appreciate it. So having him lay on the floor, the grown man, was like a really great thank you, apart from, you know, being an owner. So it's kind of really, it's really nice. Talented designers. So pinball was built in a team. So yes, you know, my name, John Pabudu, game designer, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I can't build it by myself. Absolutely not. I can build part of it by myself. I can kind of cobble it together. But pinball is a team of multidisciplinary people, artists, designers, electricians, hardware guys, software guys, you know, on and on and on. And you have to get the team to kind of work. The designer might have the vision, because, again, as Nolan Bushnell said, you have to have a champion. You know, the game project has to have a champion. You need one person that really believes in this thing, and you got to, like, pull the team kind of along. If you don't have a champion, the game will fail. It just won't kind of end up where it needs to be. So somebody needs to step up and be the champion. And obviously know the designers to work with. So in my case, you know, we're working or trying to attract or trying to work with a whole group of just younger pinball people, younger designers, younger artists. So in the case of the artists, the different artists that we work with, you know, I'm teaching them kind of the you know, John Papaduke style of art direction for pinball, which is not the only way, you know. You know, Greg Frères and I spent time last night at the buffet, and, you know, Greg's an amazing artist, and, you know, but again, you know, someone has to take kind of the lead of what does this game going to look like, unless it's a movie theme where you get a style guide and they tell you the logo goes here and things like that. Somebody's got to art direct all of this. But the young guys are good because they don't wear out as quickly. So we work well together, and you have to balance. You know when you push someone too far. And that's a lot of, the owners, you know, that are here that know me, they know I don't pander excuses. Well, the playfield wasn't routed because Mike didn't get here till 4 in the morning, blah, blah, blah. I just don't say anything. I just suck it all up. Because people have lives, too. And if a guy's basement is flooded, you can't be on him about, well, he didn't get the drawing done because, you know, Jim Shelberg wants a photo of it. It's like, you know, not picking on him. You just kind of like, you know, hey, can I help you? Can I come over? You know, what can I do? You just let it flow. And so now you might be 2 weeks late now on getting something done. So the owners are like, well, why are you late on this? Is taking you so long? Because I haven't told him my artist's basement flooded, and he doesn't have the money to fix it. And, you know, on and on, you know, the story goes on. But that's the reality of it. So you have to figure a way to help out your teammate, but also to kind of get the work done. So, and it's like price, quality, speed, pick any two. It's kind of like that. So I'd rather wait for my very talented designer to get back on track than to be like a goof and, you know, kind of steamroll them and go from there. But the work that we're doing is, you know, a group of new talented designers and new people. And, I'm, you know, during the expo, I'm always talking to people. Hey, if you want to help, give me a call. I mean, you always need help on stuff. And it's nice for me to share. And quality. So here we're doing a cable for the last Whitewood we did for Raza. But again, you know, everything needs a drawing. I was saying, you know, last presentation, and in this case, you know, we're laying out a harness, and we've had great help and some great harness designers help us. But the quality's got to be their tradition. We have a new slingshot mechanism, one piece. But if you notice, right where the, you know, the end of the linkage is in the armature, it slaps the wood. And it makes like that knock sound. So it's like whack, 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 whack.